With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Maybe I'm crazy, but I am completely done feeling bad for the Saints. I'm done.
Well, they get the bad call.
It was a bad call, but I'm done. We're done here. Right. We're done here.
Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not.
Welcome to Maybe I'm Crazy Podcast. I'm Joy Taylor. That's the newly married Brandon Newman.
Hola!
He's got rings and things. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for being there and rocking out and vibing with the whole fam.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us. It was a great time in Sarasota, Florida. There's some pictures up if you haven't seen any of them.
Yes.
They're on both our pages and Maybe I'm Crazy Pod. It's a beautiful ceremony.
Yes, people say I look good. You know what I mean? Appreciate y'all. You know what I'm saying? Shouts out to my brother QB Fitness. Got me and Michelle right a little workout plan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I went from like 323 to like 285 after the wedding. I celebrated a little bit. I'm up like 10 pounds. But you know what I'm saying? I'm going to get down to like 270 for the
summer. But you know you're married now, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yes, it's for me. I'm losing weight for y'all now. You're welcome.
Anyway, it was a great time. Welcome back. And we've got a lot today. There's actually a ton going on right now. Earl Watson.
Shouts out.
Also my fiance.
Squad Squad.
Joining us today.
Fam.
Family. Going to talk NBA and March Madness and tell some good stories. We got to talk about the Big Baller Brand situation. A little WrestleMania in the show today.
Okay.
Lakers coaching situation. Gronk is retiring. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, the Saints are on my nerves. Zion Williamson, of course. A little New York Giants and some other stuff as well. But let's get started with Earl. All right. Fiance is in the house.
Hey. Squad.
My name is Earl.
Earl Watson.
The homie Earl.
Thanks.
Yes. Through.
Thank you for joining us again. And actually, this is the first time that you've seen Brandon since the wedding.
Yeah, congrats.
Yeah,
man.
No, appreciate
you.
I see you
with the ring on.
Not, come on, I mean.
The No Limit Master P beanie
so
on.
Crazy, you know what I'm saying? $6 Amazon, you know, feel me, or whatever.
Camo
you know
mode is dope.
Don't throw jokes.
That's compliment.
I grew up
listening to Master P. He's one of my closest friends, mentor. You know, No Limit Records, the first to actually do it. You know, entrepreneur.
Why are you coming at me like
I got
really
the Hookup Part 2 is coming out.
The Hookup Part 2 is not coming out.
Yes, it's coming out.
You involved?
I wish I was. He didn't call me for that one.
Oh,
though.
Man.
But he called me to train his
Master
son.
Master P's a hooper, though.
He called me to trade and sing.
He
didn't call me for the investment. Like
you know, you got young Pete Miller to
young Hersey. He's good.
Young Percy to
he has
USC.
Game. Yeah, no, I don't know about that, but he's good.
He played for USC?
No, that's the older son. It's the younger son in high school.
Oh, he has another son, Percy Miller. You know what I mean? Let me back off. You know what I'm saying? But shouts out to y'all. You know what I mean? Appreciate y'all coming through for the wedding. You know what I mean?
The wedding was great.
Y'all was hanging out with my cousin TT, who's trying to get on No Limit 2.
Yeah, shout out to TT.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
The real one.
TT is Team Joy.
She's the realest one in the family.
What is this? Like... I put her next to y'all because I feel like y'all need to be comfortable. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You need some real, you know what I'm saying?
No,
little
it was
ratchet.
A good time, though.
Yeah.
I cried. I'm not going to lie.
You know what I'm saying?
Michelle's vows were very good.
She killed me on the vows. You know what I'm saying? I kind of wrote my vows kind of last second. I wanted the photog to get them. You know what I'm saying? They got me writing, you know what I'm saying? Sweating out there. You know, I'm a content guy. I be thinking.
When does all the content come out?
You know what? I'm not going to put people on blast right now, but I've been refreshing my emails, and I'm like, does this usually take time like this?
It sounds like a little time. They want to get it right, you know?
Okay.
Get all the filters right.
Well, we're still waiting.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, Earl.
Thanks for having me.
So the March Madness is in full effect right now, and everyone's talking about Zion and Ja and RJ Barrett and obviously Taco Fall, and that game was great. We were watching it. And... recently, Paul Pierce said that Zion is a top 50 basketball player in the world right now.
Currently.
Yeah, right now. What do you think about that?
I think that's tough to give it to him right now. I think what he's saying is the progression and potential of his game. He's so unique. He is not an analytic type of guy, where analytics are all about skill from beyond the three. But he is kind of, because everything he does is at the rim. So that's a powerful analytic. Where he's going to have to improve on is making free throws, because at the next level, he should get to the free throw line 6 to 10 times per game. He's going to eventually have to develop a three-point shot. The mid-range is never going to be there because he's so athletic. You want to just get to the rim and just finish and get to the free throw line. So how analytics work in the NBA is the layup and dunk is the best shot, points per possession. And then after that, you usually get fouls, so free throw is second, and then corner three is third. Anything outside on the arc, you really don't want to take that shot unless you James Harden, Devin Booker, or Kyrie Irving. And even then, that point per possession is kind of similar to anything below one is not good.
So is it kind of disrespectful to guys who are in the league who have develop their skill to a higher level to say that Zion is better than them right now? Is that maybe not disrespectful? Is it a bit reactionary in the moment?
I think Paul is a savant. He sees it, and guys in the league used to take that as disrespect, but now with social media and with the, you know, the fanfare of creating images, I think it's good for the sport of basketball, because we talk about it a lot, is who's the next face of the NBA. Like, we can hate on LeBron all we want. We hated on Kobe. But when Kobe left, we was like, damn, what's next?
Right.
And then LeBron came.
Who said that? When Kobe left?
Man, when Kobe left, the whole league was kind of like hurt. He had the greatest basketball commercial for a retirement. People that booed him, cheered him. You didn't like Kobe?
No. But LeBron was still there. I don't think we're at a loss as much as we are looking at the landscape and saying who is next when LeBron hangs it up.
Let me say this. Without the Celtics and the Lakers being relevant, the NBA is painfully hurt. You look at it now, the Lakers haven't been the same since Kobe really retired, even though we have LeBron. LeBron has to get to the playoffs. Kyrie has to have an amazing playoff run for the Celtics to be great. Mm-hmm. The NBA need those two franchises to be successful, especially if not the Knicks, if that makes sense.
So Ja Morant had an incredible first round, and then obviously, you know, they have this team game, so he did what he could. Yes. How do you think he translates to the NBA?
High basketball skill. His three-point shooting has improved from the first year to the second year, points per game, I think, plus 15. He has a 2-to-1 assist ratio. I think it's like 10 assists, 5 turnovers. That's going to go down. Point guards need more experience. The toughest positions to play in the league at any level is the point guard position and the center position, because point guard position in the NBA, you have so many sets, so many options, so many great, you know, opposing players on the other team you have to defend, and you have to keep everyone together. You become a therapist in the huddles and in the timeouts and in the locker room, and then you also have to find your game. Center position is a man's game, the strength and the size. You can't teach grown man strength, and you can't teach weight room for 15 years. You have to, like, develop into that. So he's going to be great. His IQ is high. He's a savant. He's beyond his years. He can pass with both hands, and he finishes well above the rim.
What's a team that could use him? Because he's supposed to go high.
Any team could use him, but I think this draft is more of a needs draft. And what I mean by that, if the Knicks get him, do they really need him? They don't need him.
No.
So they're going to take the number one pick. The number one pick, if they get, is obviously Zion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're absolutely going to get KD and you're going to get Kyrie and you think you have a great chance, I'm trading that number one pick for Devin Booker. I'm just being honest. Ooh. Because you want to come in. He's a young superstar.
Walking
bucket. He just had 59 last night, and his confidence is supremely high, and he's beyond his years as far as maturity on and off the court. So I would trade that pick for him, and if I couldn't get him, I'd keep Zion and develop. And you got to say, is the Zion pick worth a Devin Booker? Devin Booker can handle New York City. He can handle the pressures. He played at Kentucky. He loves the responsibility of ending games. And you can't tell me with a lineup potentially of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Devin Booker in New York, that's not championship quality right there for years to come.
Okay, I understand. I think it really is cute talking about both those guys going to the Knicks. But I think it's cute because there's no way that Kyrie is going anywhere but with his old homeboy LeBron. I think get the squad back together. Kyrie joins the Lakers. Get whatever other extra piece you need. And that's a championship team if they're healthy.
The way Kyrie and LeBron broke up, it was like a bad breakup. And sometimes you have a bad breakup and you just got to go back to that past and be like, hey, look, It was bad. I respect you. Thank you for everything you told me, but we can never be together again. And I think that's kind of like what you had with the Kyrie reaching back out to LeBron saying, I see what it is.
And people are reading too much into that.
People are reading too much into that because Kyrie does respect that time and that moment with LeBron. But one thing I know about Kyrie, he's very much confident in himself. I don't think he can ever go back and replace that. Like, Kyrie to the Lakers doesn't make sense. Kyrie to New York, he's an East Coast guy. He's played at Duke. That makes all the sense in the world. And if KD really isn't staying in Golden State, why wouldn't you put the two best skilled players in the NBA on the same team?
Because Kevin Durant's still trying to be number one. He still wants to be seen as number one. You get him on a team with another guy who makes the shot. I think Kevin Durant is tired of being number two on his own team and in the NBA, period.
But I don't think that Kyrie would be number one over KD if he was in New York.
I think Kyrie understands that he's a great 1A. Mm-hmm. Kevin understands that I can share with anyone. I'm already sharing with three or four guys now, but if I can just share with one more player and we go to New York and do something great, why not? So KD is a one in New York, but KD's ego isn't like that. Mm. KD was my teammate the first 2 years of his career. He really is like a people person. Like this superstar status that people want him to live with and want him to act a certain way. KD's going to be KD. KD, he socializes with people. His rookie year, he's playing video games with local kids in the neighborhood before our game. Like, oh, yeah, I was playing video games with kids in the neighborhood and I came to the game. I'm like, what? Who does that? That's just KD. But he is one of the best down-to-earth superstars that we have, and he's never going to ever be over cocky or have this ego that exceeds off the court. Now, on the court, he's a beast. He's a monster. Mm-hmm. He's not going to talk a lot. You give him the ball, just get the hell out the way. But off the court, he's easy going, and sometimes he gets knocked for that, but it just he is who he is. You got to love it.
Yeah, I think that KD's already shown that he can play with other people. And Kyrie, all the issues that they're having, that the Celtics are having, clearly shows that he's okay with being with somebody else that he can play with. Do you think the problems that the Celtics are having right now are because of the system or because of Kyrie's like leadership?
Sometimes in the NBA you can have too much. And if you have too much before players always search for identity through style of play and through contract extensions. Your contract extension is going to give you identity. Meaning if I get paid X amount of millions, I already know what my role is. Can't tell me nothing less.
Right.
You paid me for this role.
Right.
You got a lot of players coming off the bench, or a lot of players who are with the Celtics who are young, who have yet to get their big money deal. And when you have that in the locker room, and this is what I'm hearing constantly without people saying it, like players saying it, you know, you have Kyrie talk about, you know, so many players want the ball at the end of the game, or whose team is it? When you coach a superstar in the league, it's different from coaching a star. A star to me in the league is a young Tatum, is a young Brown. A superstar is Kyrie Irving. Then they're done that solidified. That's a different conversation that the head coach, the GM, and all the coaching staff need to have. That's a conversation they need to get off the court to let him know and to, you know, go through him and go to dinners and connect beyond. Because superstars are very moody. Now, they're moody for a reason because they're that great and their mind have so much on it and they see things a little bit deeper. Their mind connect and they can change and form and transform different things quickly in the game. So to me, going into the playoffs or as soon as possible, I'm hearing Kyrie saying he wants the head coach. And I'm not saying he didn't do it because I don't know. He wants Brad Stevens to put everyone in a room and tell them what their role is, even down to X amount of shots per game.
Isn't it too late for that?
It's never too late to make a change and to grow. Like, growth is never too late. Like, you want to start the season like that, and you were hoping a style of playing, you have enough good people where it would happen. But right now, something has to change because you're going into the playoffs with a fractured team. If you don't fix the fracture and put a cast on it, it's going to break. And that's what you're getting right now with the Celtics. Super talented, amazing coaching staff, one of the best closers the game has ever seen. Mm-hmm. But no one knows their role. Because Tatum is really that good. He's that good to carry a franchise. But you have to pick. You have to pick who's going to get the shot at the end of the game. Like, that's the hardest thing to do in a huddle when it's a minute 20 on the clock because you have this timeout clock that goes. Mm-hmm. It's a minute 20. It counts down until your timeout is over. And you got to look in the eyes of two players who really want that last shot.
Right.
And you got to say, it's you.
But when you really should already know who's going
to
take the last shot.
It has to be Kyrie.
Right.
Kyrie all the time. Second option is always Tatum, but only if Kyrie can't get a shot.
So if the Celtics can't get it together, who do you like in the East? I personally like the Raptors. It's kind of a... You too?
I said you got to.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think the feeling on the Raptors is a little bit of a hangover of the last couple years where, you know, LeBron was in the East, so they'd have an incredible regular season, and then they get to the playoffs, and, you know, we all know what happens. But I don't feel like it's the same team this year.
The Raptors are going to be good because you can't teach championship experience. You either have it or you don't. Mm-hmm. They have it with Kawhi and all the pieces they brought from Danny Green, and just they have a great deep. And Pascal's playing. He should be, like, most improved. He's playing amazing. Shout-outs to Rico Hines, my teammate from UCLA, who's doing it big right now. He's like this Dr. Frankenstein of hoops, right? And then you have, to me, the Sixers, who made big moves in the trade deadline. And it's a move that no one talks about. And I had this kid in the G League with the Spurs. Then the Spurs signed him, and he had an amazing playoff run and got paid. And now he found his way with the Sixers. It's Jonathan Simmons. He's 6'6", an amazing defender, an amazing playmaker, and he is confident. He doesn't care where he's from. He doesn't care what the status is. He is going at your heart. Right. It's like it's a heart check when he gets in the court. And he's going to be monumental in defending players, even point guards, 1-3. So the Sixers have a chance to disrupt a lot of things. You got Milwaukee.
I know. Everyone kind of just forgets about Milwaukee.
You have Milwaukee. You have to respect it.
They're limping towards it because they have some injuries, and – do you trust that team with even one person out, one of those starters out?
Well, the thing about the playoffs is different because in the playoffs, teams can really lock in and take away first and second options.
Yep. Okay.
I think when you're heading into the playoffs, this is significant. Your role players have to be playing at a high level. Your superstars are taking a mental break because they've been pushing all season. Mm-hmm. So mentally, what you're seeing a lot is a lot of superstars struggling because they're just mentally exhausted. And they're going to find a way to get refreshed for the playoffs. They're just dialing it down. And this is a time where you see the Spurs role players go off.
Right.
And he does it for a reason. Pop positions that for a reason. So these role players for OKC, these role players for Toronto, these role players for all these teams, Boston making the playoff push, you gotta take your game up. If you can't take your game up, then you need to be there for your superstar. And if not, you're gonna go into the playoffs and you can't turn it on. A role player cannot turn it on. Superstars can.
Speaking of the Spurs, are they gonna ruin someone's playoff run?
I mean, you can never count Pop out. To me, Pop is, you know, he's legendary.
Well, we do every year.
He's constantly reinventing himself. He's constantly ahead of the game. He has his players playing at the highest level. And they're rolling right now. They're rolling right now. So anytime you play the Spurs, you got to say, we're going into this with a 6-7 game series potentially. And if we sweep them, then we potentially might win the whole thing. You know, it's that obvious to me.
And the Spurs... The Spurs are dangerous right now, especially DeMar DeRozan, and LaMarcus Aldridge is playing out of his mind, as he usually does, around this time every year. But what you're not seeing with the Celtics, or what you're seeing with the Philadelphia, the Sixers, and not the Celtics, are those role players are playing the role to the T. You see Jimmy Butler in the last 2 minutes of the fourth, he's taking all the shots. And everybody who's getting rebounds throwing back out to him. That's why I think the Sixers are more dangerous than anyone in the East right now because they're figuring it out right now going into the playoffs.
I think exactly what you're saying is the Sixers, they all know their role. There's not, you know, you just said Jimmy Butler down a stretch. There's not no fight over the ball with Ben Simmons or Embiid. They kind of know when it's time to go, who to give the ball to. And Jimmy has that dominant personality, too, where you really don't have to say it because he's going to tell you in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Hey, yo, end of the game, that's my shot. I appreciate all the work you're doing throughout the game. Like, set this pick and roll. Right. Let me make the play and basically get the fuck out of my way. Like, you know what I mean? It just is what it is. And you have players who have that personality. Mm-hmm. Then you have players like Kyrie who's highly enlightened. And, you know, he can say it that simple, but he's like, it's not my job to say it. It's the coach's job to say it.
Well, Westbrook has that personality, and he's doing his best. I mean, he's struggling really bad right now. Just let me say it like that.
Russ has that personality, but Russ is also matured at the point where he say, hey, Paul George, go. Like, it's you're the best player in the world right now. I'm just happy to be beside you. But don't get it twisted. Like, if I get the shot, I'm shooting it. Like, it's just Russ. And I think Russ is struggling because he had an injury. Mm-hmm. He's worked his ass off all summer. And he plays so aggressively. And you're kind of seeing the same transformation with LeBron or any athletic player. When you get to a certain age, your body is starting to change. You can still jump mm-hmm. high, but not as high as you used to. You can still run fast, but not as fast as you used to. Those aches and the longevity of a season will catch up with you. So now is the time for athletic players in their late 20s, early 30s, is to dominate the elbows, similar to Kobe and Jordan, with the catch, without the dribble, conserve energy,
yeah.
get to the box, mm-hmm. find a way to be a playmaker and score in the paint and get to the free throw line. And then it's like, it's almost like chess. And then as the fourth quarter come, the last 3 minutes, the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, now you have the ball in your hands and you're coming off pick and rolls, using all your energy to get to the rim, or using all your energy to get fouled and to make plays for others. Kobe learned that over the years through the triangle, which is natural. And MJ had it because of the triangle as well.
Right. Why do you think Westbrook gets so much?
I mean, if you really look at the history of sports and the history of the black athlete, to me, Russell is one of the first in a long time to be the most outspoken, flamboyant athlete in the NBA. He started the dress. He started the fashion. He has a line at Barney's. He started like the "This is me, love me or hate me."
Why not?
In your face, right. loud. You know, when he'll come to the game with a blazer and no shirt on, with a gold chain, like, yeah. you know, he'll come dressed up as a custodial worker, like whatever he it's feels
Halloween.
Like.
Every game night's Halloween.
You know, it's just the UCLA way for athletes is to be very, you know, very transformative and creative and beyond just whoever you
confident.
Are, be that.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from a bloodline of like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, because we have to explain that. It's a lot of kids,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
From Arthur Ashe, from Jackie Robinson. And you have these players who are just outspoken and just big, big personalities. So when he goes into these arenas, he's easy to pick at. But Russ is really one of the nicest people in the world. He has to be that edgy because he's really that nice in real life. Mm-hmm. So it's this extreme, and he understands he can't let his softness creep into the court.
Yeah, I think everything you said is spot on. It's hard to figure out sometimes, because all the things that Russ goes through as a player on the court, if it's easily happens to other players and other superstars as well. But it's like anytime Russ has anything off in his game, it's overly scrutinized, and it's because he's unapologetic. And unapologetic people are easier to come at, because it's like, oh, I told you so.
Right.
This is we said that was going to happen because you play like this, when other players play like this, and it's the same way. So you talk a lot about roles. When did you first learn about roles in the NBA?
First time I learned about roles in the NBA was when my second year in the NBA, at our GM was Jerry West. And 10 games in, we hired Hubie Brown. And I was young and dumb, and I was like, damn, we hired a TNT guy, right?
Right.
He yeah. walks into the – and at the time, Bob right. Myers, who's the GM of Golden State, was my agent.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm texting Bob like, yo, why the hell we hired a TNT guy? And Bob was like, he's not the TNT guy. Like, he used to coach. I'm like, when? He was like, in the 70s. I was like, dude, I was born in 79, right? So Jerry West introduces him, and he walks into the locker room. And it was a losing culture in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
It was Jerry West's first year. I came from Seattle my first year with Gary Payton, my second year in the NBA. And Jerry introduces him, and Hubie Brown walks in. And on that team at that time was myself, Shane Battier, Pau Gasol, Stromile Swift. I believe we had a bunch of young players. And we had a nice young core. We just were just young. Jason Williams, Lorenzen Wright, the original White Chocolate, right?
Man,
Jay Will.
Shouts out.
And Brevin. Now, we had a young core. We just didn't know who we were. And Hubie Brown comes in, and he goes, first off, let me just say this. All of you are fucking losers. I'm 22 years old, right? I'm like, dude, I'm from the streets. I've never had anyone that does not look like right. a Shea like yeah. me call me a fucking like loser, right? And like not say so. So he goes, all of you are fucking losers. I'm here to show you and tell you how to be fucking winners. He was like, if you was a fucking winner, the last guy would still be here. But instead, he's packing his bags and moving his family. He was like, and you're so fucking selfish to realize that you just got a family and a dad and a father and a son fired.
Ooh.
I'm like, yo, this dude is mean.
Dude from TNT, wilding right now.
And he was like, we're going to have two-a-days for the next week. We like 10 games into the season. I'm like, two-a-days? Like, come on, man. Like, he was like, and I'm going to teach you how to be a winner. He's like, 10 of you are going to love me because only 13 players on the team. 3 of you are going to hate me. All of you are going to learn how to be man of character. All of you are going to learn how to play in the NBA for 10-plus years. And all of you are going to fucking become mature men.
Wow.
And he just, like, said, practice. Let's go practice. So he walked out the locker room. Everyone lingered in the locker room like, yo, this dude is evil. And he was the best coach I ever had in my life. And that says a lot because I played for Jerry Sloan. I've been around amazing coaches, George Karl, Nate McMillan. The list goes on, like Dick Harter, so many, Dwayne Casey. The list goes on. But this guy really changed my life.
There's been a lot of talk about old school coaches. I don't know. Could that work today? Could someone walk in the locker room today?
It depends
NBA
on.
NBA locker room, too.
No. Of course, yeah. NBA locker room.
You have to walk in with some merit. You know, like, I think this is what I think about coaching young players. There's so, and this is from experience, there's so much extra, you know, untrue baggage that comes along with young players because they see the floss on Instagram. They see, like, the awards and the merits and the lifestyle. They don't understand what it really takes to get all of that.
Right.
They don't really understand the hard work. They don't understand the sacrifice. They don't understand just because you can dribble, shoot, dunk, and pass doesn't mean that's what helps us win games. And that's what Kyrie is kind of saying right now.
Right.
Like, you have to sacrifice something. Kyrie's like, yo, I can go get 40 every night, but I have to sacrifice something too, and you do too. And, you know, I'm going to take the lash. I'm going to take the majority of the shots. Like, these players need to be taught how to be a professional before they can ever be a winning player in the NBA. And that's difficult.
What did you think about what Tom Izzo did? I don't have a problem with the yelling in so much as I feel like the optics of lunging at a player and pointing at a player were, like, too much.
I think for me personally, as a younger coach, and I've been coached by only older Hall of Fame coaches,
right?
I've always struggled with young coaches because they don't tell you the truth. Mm. And I feel like as a coach, the biggest sin you can make is to lie to one of your players. Mm. So when I coach, I have to tell you the truth. I have to say it in front of everyone. I don't want any rumors. But before I even get to that point where I'm criticizing you, it's something called off-season, right? So when you have an off-season, that's when you better get to know your players personally off the court so they can trust you to be criticized on the court. Mm-hmm. And one thing I promise my players, I will never cuss you out while you're on the court. If anything, I would do it in a closed huddle or in the locker room. On the court, I'm going to call you over and I'm going to say, hey, look, this is what we need to do. If we get in a huddle and I have to fire you up or motivate you, I'm not going to embarrass you for the whole front row to hear. Mm. To me, that's embarrassing as a player. And I also never wanted my coaches to be overdramatic, because if I feel like they're overdramatic or they're like going crazy, how am I supposed to keep my control as a point guard? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to take on that personality.
Right.
So I think there's rhythms to it. Izzo is a Hall of Fame coach without a doubt. But when you coach any sport long enough, and he's great enough to coach this long, you have to evolve. If you don't evolve and understand the rhythms and the social environment of these younger kids, you're going to eventually lose that connection. And that's why you got to go back to Popovich. He's done everything he can in his power to understand this new generation.
Right.
From reading books about what it's like growing up African-American in the United States, from, you know, reaching out to different resources and bringing people in to talk to his team and asking questions on how to coach his new generational player. So he's constantly reinventing himself in order to connect.
Sticking with the tournaments, I picked Duke, Tennessee, UNC, and Gonzaga in the Final Four. I don't know who your Final Four was.
I don't know either. But Tennessee,
I don't remember. Okay, so who do you think is gonna end up winning the tournament?
I don't know. I think that's the beauty of the tournament. I think what we saw with last weekend, or Duke barely winning UCF at the buzzer, like, you know, getting offensive rebound at the free throw line, putting it back in, anything can happen. And to me, that's a compliment to the growth and development of grassroots basketball. It's so big and so much skill is going into it, and it's constantly growing that all the best players in the country are no longer going to dominate power schools. You have these schools with players who are skilled enough to play in a 40-minute game, but they're not skilled enough to play in a 48-minute game. And that's the NBA because talent takes over with that extra 8 minutes.
Right.
So you have this impact, and I think the NCAA just kind of lucked out into it that grassroots basketball is growing. And you can have a Taco Fall. You can have a Ja Morant. And you can have schools that are, you know, pushing, almost upsetting, if not upsetting, the top schools.
What do you think of Taco Fall? Taco Fall, for those of you who don't know, give him Google. He's seven six. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's very large, but he's also he's quick though. Do you think he translates to the NBA?
I think he translates to the NBA because of his speed. He's a vertical player, north and south. He gets to the rim quick. Defensively, he's obvious a big time defender, and he protects the paint. In the NBA, he can't sit in the paint. Right. They got the 2-9.
Right.
Defensive rule. So it'd be interesting to see if he has a jump shot because I don't really know. Right, I don't know if he can shoot an elbow jump shot, but I know one thing. When he rolls to the rim, that weak side is going to have to tag, which means that corner three is going to be open. Mm-hmm. So he's going to make the defense just shift.
He'll be a disruptor.
Which is he's going to make it shift, which is difficult to do because he throw a lob, he's at the rim without jumping, right?
Yeah,
so
it's
just going to be
dunking. He's dunking without jumping.
If he just picks and rolls to the rim, you have to honor that, and that's going to force that defense to shift. It's going to be weak side three, so he could have an impact.
What's the tournament like? What's the environment like there?
The tournament, it's amazing. And, you know, for me, just going into the tournament with the UCLA legacy, it's nothing like it. You really feel like with UCLA, you're running out onto the court and you have Kareem and Bill Walton, Lou Alcindor, Gail Goodrich, you know, Sidney Wicks on your team. And that's what people expect for that tradition. And the environment is very unique and every play matters. The crowd is overly excited. And if you lose, you go home. And if you win, you might get some gifts from the NCAA. So you have that motivational factor, right?
Man.
You might get, you know, back then it was like a video game. You might get whatever it is now. You progress. And it's a lot of pride. And it's very emotional. And you see majority of the families attend tournament games. Mm-hmm. Because that's when most families can make it. And it's the most important.
All right. Well, we can't get you out of here without talking about this LA team. The Lakers.
Oh yeah,
you didn't know Brandon has adopted the Lakers now.
That's a team.
That's a team now.
You know what I'm saying?
How do you feel about the Lakers?
How long have you been a Lakers fan for? Two, three years.
I mean,
like 9 months.
I don't know the months, but months would sound a lot more than the years.
Okay.
Years about three, going on 4 years. This is pedigree for millennials. We out here.
How do you feel about the Lakers?
You know what I mean. I've said that the NBA and the NFL free agency is more suspenseful than the film Us. Y'all seen Us yet?
Yes.
We watched Us last night.
Is the free agency a little bit more suspenseful than?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying we're watching it, and LeBron's setting up for a great comeback. I'll say that. He's setting up right now for a tremendous comeback.
What he's trying to say is that
it's a downtime right now.
So this was all planned, this was orchestrated.
You know what I'm saying? Some people supposed to sit out for 6 months, they sit out for 5-6 weeks. You know what I mean? Like, you know, things happen. But LeBron's out here for the fans. He's averaging 27-8-8. Like, he's still out here. The Lakers are trash. LeBron's all right. Lakers trash. LeBron's okay.
How do you feel they can improve? Like, it's
going to take somebody in the front office. Somebody got to tell Rob Pelinka or Magic Johnson what to do, because I don't know if they necessarily know what to do. I mean, I say clean house. LeBron, everybody, Genie can stay.
Everyone goes?
You know what I'm saying? But
Magic's gone.
I mean... Yes.
Magic's not going anywhere.
He's going to keep hiring these names. We're going to get Hubie Brown in here. You know what I'm saying? We're going to get big names.
Everybody
get big names. Hey.
When
Hubie took over our team, we won like 25 games. The next year, we won like 52. Major push for
major key.
Here's my thing. Here's my thing about the Lakers, right? The greatest players ever play our game, they do this. They find a way to reinvent their style of play.
Okay.
LeBron has to find a way to conserve energy. He has to, like I said, master the elbows, master the mid post, get to the free throw line. He should get to the free throw line 10 to 12 times per game.
Got to make them, though.
It doesn't matter. He needs to get there.
Yeah.
Right? You have to get there before you can make them or miss them. So you have to get there. And then out of that, you can have a new style of play. And at the end of the game, you can go back to LeBron, high pick and roll, jumping over players and getting to the rim. Here's the danger. Like, if I'm sitting in that office in the war room and we throwing players up on the board, and what are we going to do? If we trade our young players now, 2 years from now, we're going to be in the same situation as D'Angelo Russell, where he's an all-star, right? And that's going to be 2 point guards you lost that are all-stars. For a player who could potentially win a championship for us, maybe one, in his late 30s. Right? Mm-hmm. If you bring in Anthony Davis, which is not going to happen because we all know Celtics have more assets than the Lakers. Right. But if say you got lucky and you brought in Anthony Davis, you still don't have shooting.
Right.
So if I'm coaching against the Lakers and LeBron and Anthony Davis is in the pick and roll, I have my entire weak side in the paint with a tag. Meaning as Anthony Davis roll, we tagging him. We slowing him up. Tag. Skip it to the weak side. I'm going to close out to a non-shooter short.
Right.
And if we get beat by non-shooters beyond the three, at least it was Anthony Davis and LeBron.
The worst insult is that's what we want. When you take a shot and somebody scream, that's what we want?
Yeah.
or fighting
words. Or you just let him sit out there nobody even makes an attempt to go get him.
Or they scream, he's with us. He's with us. Like, you know, so the Lakers need shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers, they're going to have to part with some of the young pieces, but which ones do you part with? And then how can you get LeBron in a system that we all know what it is? Like, we know the roles, we know the identity, we know the style of play, and we know who needs to improve their game. Because right now, I don't know from game to game who's going to be his second option or third option.
LeBron doesn't know his role right now. I think that's a big part of the problem with the Lakers is you're talking about a need-based draft. People, we don't know what player LeBron wants to be. He wants to be the best five. He wants to be a good, decent four. Like, we don't even know where LeBron's going to be on the court. He's a point guard.
I think that's easily fixed, right? Whoever is Luke Walton, whoever is the coach, they spend like a week with LeBron, not even on the court. Go to his place of comfort, if it's his house or his office or whatever it is. It's the off season, so you say, "Hey, look, what is your role?" Because this is a superstar is different. When you talk to a superstar, you can't really tell him this is what you're going to do. You're going to ask him, how can we have a partnership in creating a great system so you're always comfortable, right? You're always comfortable. You're always at your highest point. And he's going to be honest with you. He's going to say, look, at this point in my career, I want my minutes to be like 34 minutes a game, right? I do want the ball in my hands, but I'm open to not having the ball in my hands the entire game. But I need to close quarters, and I need to close games, right? And then you can say, perfect. Now let me go back and let me create a system around my greatest player. Coach Wooden had me in Encino at his condo. I had to go visit him when I was at UCLA. Coach Wooden, he put me down in his den and his books everywhere, and he's reciting poetry and he's talking about how he would write his wife love letters who had passed away for 20 plus years every Sunday. He put it in an envelope and put it under his bed and he just pulled them out and showed me, right?
Damn.
And then he goes, look, it's twice in my career I did not run the UCLA high post, which is a 1-4 offense. The bigs are at the elbows, the guards are at the wings. It's only twice in my career that I didn't run the offense I created, which is UCLA high post. I'm 18 years old. I'm from Kansas City. I don't even know where the hell I'm at. Encino just sounds so far. Right? And he's asking me, like, do you know when? I'm like, man, I don't even know how to get home from here. Like, there's no GPS.
MapQuest.
I just go to MapQuest and print it out. And right? And I'm like, how am I going to get here and look at the paper at the same time? Right? So I'm like, Coach, I don't know when.
Yeah.
And he's like, kind of disappointed I didn't know. I'm like, damn, I disappointed him already. And he goes, when I had Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton, he was like, greatest coaches are the greatest teachers. You have to adjust your style of play and identity of your team around your greatest superstars. So whoever coaches LeBron needs to sit down with him, get him into a partnership. So now he's fully committed. And it's going to who's not going to follow that in the locker room? When LeBron said this is what it is, your head coach says this is what it is, then this is what it is. Like, you're going to get better in a role with identity, but you have to have him committed first.
You have so many stories.
Yeah, I was
that's crazy, right?
I was there. I was in the basement.
To win his condo?
Yeah, the poetry, it was beautiful. Oh,
he was super dope.
Oh, my gosh, Wooden?
One of the best.
The GOAT.
Yeah, he is.
We about to turn up in this bitch.
All right, what am I winning or quitting today?
Robert James Gronkowski retired from the NFL on Sunday. Gronk helped Tom Brady and the Patriots win 3 Super Bowl championships. After 9 seasons of dominance, he is definitely on his way to the Hall of Fame. Joy. Gronk is the second greatest tight end of all time. Wit it or quit it.
I am going to wit that, actually.
Okay.
We are, if you don't understand why we're wearing the shades,
shouts out.
Google Gronk. I don't think he still likes these, but I wouldn't be surprised if he still has some of them. Shout out to Rob. I've known Rob for a very long time. Great guy. And
did you know him as Rob?
Yes, I knew him as Rob.
Yeah,
actually. Rob. Yeah, I did not call him Gronk. I've never called him Gronk. I've referred to him as Gronk because it's the only thing people know him as.
Right.
But yeah, no, I call him Rob. Great career. Congratulations on a great career. Pride of Woodland Hills High School. Shout out Woody High, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that Gronk, who I will refer to from moving forward, these glasses are ridiculous.
It's
very
hard,
very, very difficult to focus.
Definitely fogging
yours
up
are fogging
top.
Up because you're wearing a hat.
True.
And
that
as
it.
You know, the purpose of hats of that sort is to keep your head warm.
And I have a lot of hair, and it's my chest.
You
is
also still have the UV 400 sticker. So these are actually functioning sunglasses. They're not just to look ridiculous.
Functioning.
I mean, if they have the UV. Is that helping? Is it helping to rub the? I feel like you should rub the inside where the.
To get the UV glare off.
Where the? Well, if you're trying to get it to unsteam.
Oh, I see it. Okay.
So anyway, Gronk.
Yes.
Gronk is the second best tight end of all time. To me, Shannon Sharp is the best tight end of all time.
I mean,
Gronk follows him closely.
Yes.
The only nod I would give to Shannon is that Shannon played longer.
But Gronk had more touchdowns. But I like to argue, as dominant as Gronk has been his entire career, like you can't. He's not better than Shannon Sharp because Shannon Sharp gave us, 62 touchdowns in an era where running backs ran the NFL.
Right.
Let's just be real. And Gronk had Tom Brady and Bill Belichick this entire time where Shannon bounced around with 2 different teams and
Shannon had a decent quarterback, pretty decent quarterback.
Yeah, the second time when he came over to the Ravens and still got that, and still got the national championship with no quarterback.
No, Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, I'm sorry. What did I say?
National championship. I don't know why you would say
that's
that.
That's a big one.
Anyway, I agree with you. I agree with you, but they're very close. And then to me, I think it's arguable with Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to put Rob second just because Rob has the rings.
Yeah.
And but Tony is arguable because Tony's numbers are just insane. I mean, he's a 14-time Pro Bowler, 6-time first-team All-Pro. Like, you can go down the numbers. Tony's obviously first ballot Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. And then you have Antonio Gates. And, I mean, after that, you can argue a bunch of different players. Kellen Winslow, Jason Witten,
Jeremy Shockey was
Ozzie
my
Newsom,
favorite
Jeremy Shockey,
player to watch.
Jimmy Graham, there's obviously huge names out there that were influential to the tight end position, but I think those are the top 4 for me.
Right.
Pretty interchangeable. I think Shannon at the top just because of the rings, mm-hmm. And the longevity, and Rob is close there. But overall, like, Gronk had a career that I feel like over the last couple years has kind of been. Not dismissed, but just gone a little unappreciated because of his injuries.
Right.
Obviously, he did have a lot of catastrophic injuries, but he was at one point the most dominant, powerful, game-changing offensive weapon maybe in NFL history, like
no
that
question.
We had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
No one could tackle him. You had to double-team him. If he got the ball, you were getting yards after the catch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was unstoppable and fast. Like, you had never seen a big guy run before, agile with wiggle. Like, we forget all of what Gronk was because of the past couple years and the injury. That's why I'm really happy for him that he was able to have the influence on the Super Bowl that he had this year because it brought it back to, like, don't forget what Gronk really was to the NFL. I know there's, like, some murmurs out there that he's going to come back. I don't see that at all. He's not, despite his whole bad boy party image, he's actually a very locked up guy. Like, he hasn't blown through his money. He's very responsible. And he hasn't been, the Patriots haven't gotten rid of him.
So,
and he's never been in any actual trouble.
Yeah.
Like, for all of the shenanigans, like, dude just likes to party. That's what he is, and he's never apologized for it. Yeah. So
let's drink light beer. It's a fan of and Bud Light. Y'all got chill, man. Y'all keep coming from Miller Lite and Coors. Like, I get it. The corn syrup thing, that's hard. But, like, y'all coming at them different angles, man. It just doesn't seem any fair.
I have a question. Does anyone care if there's corn syrup in beer?
I do now.
I do.
Why? Why did I ask you that question? Yeah, never mind.
Exactly.
I immediately regret asking that. I'm sorry. You drink beer out of mason jars, so I should not ask you that question. Cold roasted hops with a scent of maple sprinkled with some paprika in my beer.
Sounds pretty good, Joy.
Does actually sound not bad. Paired with a nice sandwich.
Is Gronk top two Patriot of all time? Then we move on. Just need to.
I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to the long history of Patriots, but you make that argument, and I think he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. At me, bro.
Yeah. As long as he doesn't come back, like Witten. Like, does it restart Witten's clock?
Yeah, I think now? It's from when you actually retire, retire.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, what's next?
Shout out, Ashley. Okay, the UFC cash cow, Conor McGregor, announced his retirement to mixed martial arts, saying, "I wish all my old colleagues well going forward in competition. Blah, 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 blah. Proper pina coladas on me, fellas." Former UFC superstar Ronda Rousey said, "We'll see how permanent this retirement is." Joy, Conor McGregor ain't done fighting yet. Win it or quit it.
I am going to quit it. I think he is done.
Really?
Some news has dropped. We know we're done with these.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just...
Woo! That's over.
Jeez.
Where did you even find? I don't even know where we
now
found
more
those.
More obstruction.
That's a moment of adjustment.
That's got to look great. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Don't do it. It's just going to scratch something. You're going to be so mad. Yeah. All right. Anyway, some news has come out that he's being investigated for some sexual harassment or something or other in Ireland.
Always bad.
So we don't know what's going on with that yet, obviously. There's some other laws for how you can report on that in Ireland. So we're just getting that from the New York Times today. Mm. But he did announce his retirement. He does have the proper whiskey. It's what's called proper whiskey?
Yes, Proper 12.
Proper 12 whiskey.
Yeah, I'm not a huge whiskey drinker, so I'm sure it's fine. But anyway, I'm definitely not drinking whiskey inside pina coladas either.
Yeah,
that's for rum.
Yeah.
That's for sweetness. Actually, I prefer a virgin pina colada. It tastes much better. It does. Because if I'm drinking a sweet beverage by the pool for the taste, it's virgin pina colada.
Now, I was
if
trying
I'm,
to...
If I'm drinking it for the purpose, yeah, it's a margarita. Well,
I was gonna really fight you, but a virgin strawberry daiquiri at Red Lobster is just.
I mean, they're
the
just
best
delicious. It's like so much better without the alcohol. It takes away from the delicious extra sugariness.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, I do think he is actually going to retire this time for multiple reasons. One, I don't think he is crazy enough to get back into the octagon and get his ass beat, because that helps no one. Right. It already kind of felt like he was retired. He was on some sort of suspension for the, I forget what altercation it was. I'm not even going to pretend like I know what he was suspended for this time.
The bus thing,
that's what he was suspended for.
I'm pretty sure.
I thought it was for something else.
It could be.
I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, the point is, he had a great career, and it was short. And that's kind of just the UFC way.
Yeah.
And people always think it's like the end of the UFC when Ronda left, when George St. Pierre was gone.
Right.
Like, every time one of the superstars leaves, Chuck Liddell, like, Anderson Silva, John Bones Jones has done, it's over. Like, it's never over. They're going to find another superstar. They're going to captivate us. There's going to be storylines, because that's the nature of that sport. And the reason it's like that is because everyone loses in that sport. There's too many ways to lose. It's not like boxing where you can be Floyd Mayweather and master the sweet science and not get hit and go undefeated.
Yeah.
It's possible to do that. It's impossible to go undefeated in UFC at a superstar level. Like, you're just going to fight somebody who's good enough. They're going to sneak you. Something bad's going to happen. There's just too many ways to lose. And then once you lose, your immortality goes away, and then it just, like, then have to come back, and it's just a whole thing.
UFC is one of those rare sports where even when you win, you lose. Like, a lot of those guys, you can win as much as you want, but you're losing every time you get out of that ring, and it's hard to get back into it.
It's taking a little bit out of you. Right. And Conor McGregor has made a bajillion dollars, and the only reason I would see him getting back into a ring or an octagon is because he's running low on those funds. So if he was to do anything, I could see him boxing again. I couldn't see him going back into the octagon again. I'm not going to get dramatic about this retirement because obviously he has retired and unretired before. Mm-hmm. And
as leverage.
Fighters sometimes do that.
Right.
And the new news may have had something to do with this retirement. Who knows? But overall, he was sort of out of sight, out of mind for me anyway. So for this isn't like a huge, colossal announcement to me. It's just like, oh, okay, you're just doing your other stuff now, which I kind of assumed you were going to do anyway. Because I have no interest in seeing Conor McGregor get back in there and get his ass beat.
Like, he should have sent a follow-up tweet thanking Floyd Mayweather for the opportunity to retire, because without that payday, he may have had to step into the octagon a couple more times.
I think he was talking about former colleagues or something.
I know, but I'm saying it's Floyd Mayweather, he's got him to think about why he
can
really
retire. He's an all-time fighter. He's going to go down in history as one of the greatest, if in some people's opinions, the greatest talker of all time.
Okay. I'm not even taking there.
You know, however you want to look at some of the things that happened during the Mayweather McGregor press tour, which I thought was an insane concept to begin with.
Right.
What do you expect? Mm-hmm. This is going to happen. But anyway, the point is, great career. Thank you for the content. Not really moving me because I kind of already felt like he was done.
Deuces.
Hear ye, hear ye. Juju Smith-Schuster is petty. Mm. So everybody is coming for the king of Pittsburgh. That's not true, actually. I'm the king of Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger has been getting a lot of criticism recently for his leadership style, possibly purposely fumbling, which is an outrageous accusation if true.
Big wild.
Not saying I don't believe it, but if that is true, that is get your ass beat territory.
Can't come back from that.
Metaphorically, of course.
I'm
not constituting I'm not supporting
advocating.
That's the word. Thank you for that.
No problem.
Violence. But Juju Smith-Schuster has decided to cape up, and he posted a picture of himself hugging Ben.
Cape up.
And added the message, "I was so blessed to enter the league and play with a Hall of Fame quarterback as a 20-year-old. Ben has taught me so much. He's a true leader, and I can't wait to rock with my guy this season." Now, obviously the timing of this is questionable. However, I'm not doubting the purposeful. I'm not doubting the authenticity or the genuine nature of this. I'm sure they do like each other. Mm-hmm. But this is a little bit petty. There's a little tone of the pettiness flying around here, which I'm here for, obviously. I think Juju is going to have a great season. And I think that this year is a prove it year for Ben Roethlisberger. Oh, but he has two championships and he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Yes, I'm aware. But they lost Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Yeah. And those two have been pointed to as the issue makers in Pittsburgh. Le'Veon being out last year, it meant nothing because their running game didn't fall off at all. And Antonio Brown bailing the team, and that's why they didn't make the playoffs. And okay, we're going to see. Now we're going to see, because they're not there anymore. And Ben's still there. Mm-hmm. And Ben's the one who's getting all of these accusations for not being a good leader. So this is the year. If none of this is true and it's all Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell's fault, cool. Y'all should be in the playoffs next year and should not miss a beat. And I'm not saying that they're going to be terrible next year, because they still have a great offensive line. They still have Juju Smith-Schuster. They still have Ben Roethlisberger and a bunch of other pieces. So we'll see. I don't have high expectations, because I feel like the Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Big Ben era was squandered. And that's just how I feel about it. I feel like what happened in Pittsburgh was a colossal disappointment. I know people in Pittsburgh are very resistant to criticizing anyone on the team. I don't understand why. Because the last time I checked, the standard is the standard, and the standard is championships, and excuses are for losers. And I don't do that. Not where I'm from, and I don't like that shit. So everybody else being all soft, and oh, it's Antonio Brown's fault, it's Le'Veon Bell's fault, Ben can't be criticized. All right, cool. Well, we're going to see. And I'm talking to all Steelers fans right now, because everyone is in their feelings. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, everybody thinks that all of the my favorite new narrative, and you know I don't get caught up in comments a lot, because I just try and avoid that and keep that out of my life. But every once in a while, you know, I'll see one, just like, because it happens, unfortunately.
You know how to read.
It's a casualty of that skill. This idea that the national media has like vendettas is so weird to me. Like, I'll get tweets from people that are like, well, if your network would let you talk about real stuff, then you would know that Ben Roethlisberger's been supported by three offensive linemen. You know, FS1, they don't want you to say anything nice about Ben Roethlisberger. And it's like, I don't understand. Is that a thing people really think happens? Like, I'm...
I mean, well, Cowboy, we're... What? I guess we're like an NFC... Are we... I don't...
Like, you think that it's my goal to just make up things about Ben Roethlisberger that aren't true. I got that kind of time? That's really what I feel. I feel like it's you're disrespecting me as a person by telling me I have the time to sit around and think about things to make up about Ben Roethlisberger. It's just weird to me. Like, I don't get it. I feel it's disrespectful to me as a person that you think I have the time to sit here and have a vendetta. I don't care, okay? Let me just be very clear. I don't care. All I care about is the Steelers being good because the Dolphins are going to be awful. And the Steelers are my other team, and I need them to be good or else I have a miserable season, okay? That's the point, all right? So stop making excuses. It was a disaster of a season. Just say it. That's what it was. They didn't make the playoffs. That's not what we do, all right? And we're not even just trying to make the playoffs. We're trying to win championships around here. So you can't have all of these issues, and I'm sorry, but there can't be this much smoke without there being some kind of issue with Ben Roethlisberger being the proper leader. And just take some responsibility for it. You know what I would respect? If at this point everyone just came out that's like still on the team and was like, yeah, we had a horrible season. This is why. This is where I messed up. I should have been in a room with this person. I should have said this to this person. I didn't do it. Moving forward, we're going to do things differently. We messed up here, and this is what we're changing. Instead, it's like, yeah, we all got to look in the mirror, and, you know, we all really love Ben. Everything's cool. I bet. So what you're telling me is you're not going to make the playoffs again next year?
Well, that's what I was saying. You got to pay attention to this because Juju's been – he said – everything right up until this point. Every time, even when he's lost games, he said the perfect thing. He's played social media the perfect way he should as a young player in the league. Pay attention to what he's saying about Ben Roethlisberger, because if that opinion changes ever, we're going to see it all in the Instagram.
I'm not questioning Juju's authenticity. I don't think he has any reason to lie. I'm not saying that right now. I'm just saying that I need results and not all of this like passing the blame stuff around. Yeah. I'm not saying Antonio Brown doesn't deserve some blame. Certainly does. I'm not saying Le'Veon doesn't deserve some blame. Certainly does. Nobody in the situation was perfect. All I'm saying is I keep hearing a lot of the same when I really want to hear something different. Yeah. And that's not what's happening. So...
It's time for High Key, Low Key.
All right, time for High Key, Low Key. I always forget what we do, though. We go High Key, Low Key.
It's time for High Key, Low Key. This is a drop.
This is a drop. Okay. It's always messed that up. So High Key, the Lakers are going to fire Luke Walton. And Low Key, they should not hire Jason Kidd. So Jason Kidd was on The Jump yesterday talking about, you know, if the yellow and purple, is that what they call it?
Purple and gold. Yeah.
Why do people get so specific about the hue?
Yeah, okay. If they name it's the color, yellow. It's a name.
Oh, really?
Notre Dame is old gold in navy blue. It's old gold.
Of course it's old
and
gold.
And Kelly Green. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's a thing. You're going to name it. Let's not do it. We're trying to go. Just go through the thing. He was looking thirsty on The Jump. Continue.
Anyway, he was referring to if the purple and gold come calling, you answer. Which in the coaching perspectives, of course, he's totally right. Like, of course if the Lakers call him, he's going to go coach the Lakers. Why would he not go coach the Lakers? That makes perfect sense. Now, from a player perspective, you may have other opinions about whether that's a good spot for you or not.
Right.
So that's kind of I'm not going to pick apart his words as far as that goes. But what I don't understand about the Jason Kidd hire is while Jason Kidd was, if you just compare Luke Walton's record and Jason Kidd's record in the last, like, three, just call it their last three seasons.
Right.
Jason Kidd was more successful. He obviously had better talents, if you want to break that down, except for this year where Luke had LeBron, which would trump those, but then LeBron was injured. So it's like, what are you really looking for here?
It's in the,
like,
East as well.
When you look at Jason Kidd, like, what is it that you're gaining that you don't have with Luke Walton? Unless Jason Kidd has some secret deep connection with LeBron James that we don't know about. No. I don't know if that's the case. Cool. Awesome. Hire Jason Kidd. I feel like at this juncture where the Lakers are, nothing makes sense to me except for what Earl was talking about. Whoever coach they bring in has to be able to connect to LeBron on such a deep, soulful level, or at least on a level where it's like, you're going to do whatever it is I say. You have to keep LeBron happy. We have seen what happens when LeBron is unhappy with the coach. It's a disaster. It can't work.
We've seen it every year, it feels like, though.
But that's what it is. Like, if LeBron's not vibing with the coach, it's not happening. On top of, you don't have the players that you need. So, to me, who they hire is not as important. Like their resume isn't as important as their relationship with LeBron. Like that's all that it comes down to. Forget everything else you've done. What's your relationship with LeBron? Actually, forget. Why am I asking you? LeBron, what is your relationship with this guy? It doesn't even matter. Like, that's it. That's all that matters to me. So I don't, when I look at Jason Kidd, like, no name is going to excite me that they could possibly hire. There's no one, unless it's Hubie. That would be actually very interesting. But like, if you're, other than that, there's no name that's going to excite me. Like, this idea of Doc Rivers, like, Doc Rivers is a great coach. Doc Rivers would be an upgrade for most teams. But why is Doc Rivers, even in the conversation as the coach for the Lakers, does he have a relationship with LeBron? Because otherwise, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you are. You got to have a relationship with LeBron. All right, moving on. High key, big baller brands. The story is so sad. Low key, why are you happy about this sad story? Why are you happy?
Yeah, what are you celebrating?
All right, here's the thing. If you didn't hear, basically, a guy named Alan Foster, who was very close to the family, who we have both met.
Been in this room.
He has been in this room, correct. He has actually been in this room. You are right about that. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
He's been in this room. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, again, like, very, very shocking. Allegedly stole $1.5 million from Lonzo.
Can't find it.
They can't find it. And he had some criminal past, and it's a whole thing. And Ramona Shelburne reported on it, and now they're discussing ending the whole enterprise, just folding Big Baller Brand. Lonzo and his brothers deleted all the Big Baller Brand stuff from their page, allegedly unfollowed their dad. There's like a whole thing. There were some reports that Lonzo had warned LeVar about it, and that nothing was done. Who knows what the actual inside story within the family of how that went down is.
Right.
I'm going to assume there's some missing parts to the story, just having been around the Ball family at all. And I'll just say this, like, very, it's shocking. And I know there were people who are always rooting for LeVar to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because LeVar is unapologetic and he's loud and he proclaimed things and he said things that people didn't agree with, like he could beat MJ in one-on-one, which hasn't happened, so technically he's not a liar yet.
No.
And I mean, look, like he did great things for his son.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you want to say about LeVar, Lonzo's on the map because of LeVar. Like, Lonzo's a great player at UCLA. Became what he was because of LeVar.
Yeah.
That's facts. And you can argue anything about it. You're wrong. That is a fact. What happened with them happens to literally everyone on planet Earth. At one point or another, you're going to get scammed, whether it's for $5 or whether it's for $1.5 million or whether it's for $100 million. There's Ponzi schemes aplenty.
Ooh.
Give it a Google. Happens to rich people, very, very smart people who have invested billions of dollars. It happens to lots of people.
Yep.
So this is not something where it's like, oh, you know, you should have known better. Okay, maybe, but probably not, because it happens to everyone. Everyone has a story where they're like, yeah, I got scammed. Yep, I thought this was happening, and it wasn't. And it's sad because people rooted so hard against this whole enterprise and this whole idea. And I think we've always been on the same page. Like, it's like rooting for the man. Like, what?
Wait.
What are you doing? Who does that?
Right, his name's the man.
Who roots for the man?
Yeah,
like,
don't do that.
Who are you? What did you do? You just like you're like the person who likes paying taxes.
Right. The man raised you.
Like, you like
did the man raise you?
You like having all of the rules against you to like fail? Like,
it's
you like being controlled
here.
By corporate America? Like, cool. You sound like a hoot at a party. I mean, what is that? What is that mentality? It's so sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that you have to like LeVar, you have to agree with everything that he says or does, but the idea that, you know, you could go out and create your own and as a black man go out and create your own in the face of having millions of dollars on the table in front of you. And it's not about being controlled. Like, having a contract with Nike is nothing to be ashamed of. Like, that is an incredible accomplishment, and it's great, and I will take a contract with Nike now. Like,
King James got a lifetime one.
Right. I'm not speaking ill of that in any way. I'm just saying, if you want to create your own thing, you should be enabled and encouraged to do that. And like, having people root against you, I get it. Like, there's haters out there. I don't understand how haters think. Like, it's not a journey I want to take. Like, follow the white rabbit. Not interested. Like, whatever y'all do is your thing. I don't respect it, but I feel you. Like, it's something inside you got to work out with yourself. So you hate on other people. It's cool. Like, I know it's a thing. I don't get it.
Ooh.
Like I'm saying, but like, it's a thing. Anyway, I'm just saying, like, I feel bad for him. I feel bad for the whole family.
Yeah.
It's a scam artist. Like, it's sad.
Now,
That's it.
I want them to get it figured out, because the splits are like 16 goes to LeVar, 16 goes to Allen, and 51% goes to Lonzo. So
yeah,
like,
I mean, and the tricky part is that he's involved business wise.
Yeah.
But
and I still
yeah.
want to support Lonzo and the Ball family, and that's why I
plan on doing
big
that.
Big Baller Brand, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But it's but like I don't know what's going on within their family thing. Like I have right. no idea what's going on with that. Like just surface based on reports, that's how I feel about it. And again, like I don't understand the mentality about rooting for other people to fail when they're trying to create something new. Like you should only encourage that. It doesn't affect you in any way. You can still buy Nikes if it doesn't work out. You know what I'm saying? All right, high key. Women's WrestleMania is going to be lit. I'm calling it Women's WrestleMania now. From now on, from this point forward, it shall be known as Women's WrestleMania.
Love it.
They have the marquee end of WrestleMania yeah. match is all women, Divas, I believe.
Yeah.
That's what we refer to them as.
WWE Divas.
And low-key Gronk is going to be there for show.
Ooh.
Show for show. For show for show.
Gronk with a cameo rest. Oh yeah, he's here. Book
for
it.
Show for show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean
Rob.
Yes. He's going to be a part of wrestling in some way or another. Like there's too many there's smoke, there's fire. All right. So and this is happening. And right now I like what's more appropriate Gronk reference? There's like Apple vape, there's fire. Okay. I don't know. Gronk, I'm sure Gronk doesn't vape. It's just that was a horrible joke.
I wouldn't say Gronk doesn't vape. You know what I mean?
I have no information on whether he vapes or not. I'm just saying like the sad like when I really knew society as a whole was starting to just truly deteriorate is when I saw like the vaping contest. Have you ever seen that? There's like literally vaping championships.
How does one win? Like empty.
Whoever I guess it's a judgment system and you inhale whatever it is,
the vapors yeah.
and then you create as if like your Gandalf. Remember when Gandalf would use the pipe?
So it's like a cloud-based quantity.
It's vape art.
Vape art. I see Gronk hosting, judging a vape art contest.
That I can wow. see.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I can see.
Gronk going to be the main host. Y'all, no, Rob Lowe, everybody, y'all Gronk, get y'all things yeah, while y'all okay, can.
Whatever,
Gronk coming from the spot.
Yeah, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
If you are an
deal,
NLA,
no deal.
Yes. Gronk is about to host everything. And he will I would put heavy money on him being at WrestleMania
yeah,
this year.
Look at those eyes.
But yeah, so the women are closing out the main events of WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in the 35-year history. Ronda Rousey,
about
Becky
time.
Lynch, and Charlotte Flair in New Jersey on April 7th. Yeah. One day we'll get around to not having to do the first of things, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and also, like, when it happens, I think a little mention like this is good. Like, they're all monumental, but the more we bring it up how monumental it is, the more it makes
yeah,
us remember
and
how
I'll say,
backwards
like,
everything has
right,
been.
Right. Yeah. We just have to say it so then people remember that yeah. there are still firsts of things happening. So when you're like, oh my God, everyone's so sensitive. Like, yeah, right. well, we'll stop being sensitive when we're not have like the first woman's spacewalk. There's yeah. been female astronauts for, I don't know, like a couple years. Probably a while. Anyway, I'm actually excited about wrestling now because I like Ronda Rousey and
oh
I don't think that wrestling fans are so in on Ronda Rousey. But
yeah, they're too much. They're too purist.
I bought a Rowdy Ronda shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not come as advertised. I didn't get the official one, and it was not as clear, so I haven't worn it yet.
Someone said you got scammed.
I did. There you go. I was scammed. I was scammed by whatever Etsy dealer that
was. I was about to say, some of y'all
the cheap Rowdy Ronda shirt.
Yeah, some of y'all found like 10 accounts right now that's just waiting for a scam. They slow burning. That scam.
Scammers will wait, too. They wait, boy.
Yeah,
they have the patience.
Yeah,
all of us should try to have the patience of a scammer.
Amen.
Right?
Amen. That's great.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Loser power rankings. Loser power rankings. These are the losers of the week. Okay.
Woo.
Here's the thing, New Orleans. I love you. All right. I love the city of New Orleans.
Yeah, especially
I'm
here.
Positive I was a voodoo priestess or something in my past life. Okay. I've been many things.
Shouts out to Angela Bassett.
I've lived many lives. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I actually saw Angela Bassett. Sometimes here in LA, I might have told the story already. Sometimes here in LA, you will see things being filmed.
Always.
It's a main business in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, but I forget. I really forget sometimes. So I'm driving down the street and I see this convoy because whenever they do car scenes out here, they have like police on either ends, you know, to protect the public.
Right.
And she was driving.
But also get the shot.
Yeah. Right. And she was driving in a car. Angela Bassett.
911 outfit? Was she on 911?
I think it was for 911.
Woo!
That's what it looked like.
That show is good. It's a good bad. It's great. It's a great bad.
Like, I've not seen
you watching, you like,
I've not seen it, but all I know is Angela Bassett is not like the rest of us.
No.
There's humans that are over here.
Yeah.
And then there's the rest of us.
Yeah.
And she is over there.
Because she looks like she does and she's 70.
In an elite class of special people that God has designated are above the rest of us.
Man.
And that is Angela Bassett. Like Julia Roberts is in that category. Angela Bassett.
Marissa Hargitay.
Yes.
She's up there.
Halle Berry.
I'm gonna stop there.
We can go on and on. Yeah. The point is, she's over there. Anyway, so now we're gonna start on this. New Orleans, yes. New Orleans has got to stop. All right, you got it. We feel you, and we were with you, and we fought the good fight with you. But it's enough, okay? And the problem is, this is my problem. It's gonna trail over into the next season because we're done with it. Okay, you had a bad call, and I know it's gonna hurt. All right, it's always gonna hurt. All right, I get it. All right, this happened to University of Miami, Ohio State. Terrible call. Okay, terrible. Everyone agrees.
Yeah.
All right? Even Ohio State people, even though they're going to, say stuff about it, they know that was a bad call. All right? Everyone knows it's a bad call. Can we all just say it's a bad call? Everyone in the room? It's like we're just agreeing.
Everyone agrees.
It's a bad call. All right. Can we just move on?
All right. Pass
Sean Payton. They should have called pass interference. And then maybe you would have lost the next week. Okay?
Man.
Or who knows what would have happened? Maybe he would have dropped it. Who knows? Okay? Who cares? It's over. We're done with this. We've talked about it. It has been acknowledged. You need to let it go. It's time to let it go. It's like this is us having the intervention with you. We've sat you down. You are still obsessed with playing college softball. You swore that this was going to be your calling for life, and it is not. It's now time to quit all the leagues, okay? And you got to get a job, all right? That's what we're talking about here, okay?
Oh, my God.
Because Sean Payton, they're the league meetings right now, all right? And he's talking to the NFL competition committee, and he wants to expand the instant replay for pass interference calls. And I don't have that much time to live, Sean, all right? We don't have that much time on Earth. I don't have that much time to watch football games. I have stuff to do. We have families. Oh, I have food to eat and stuff to do. I can't be sitting around waiting for all these refs to go over all these pass interference calls. Who wants to live like that? Nobody. We shouldn't have to suffer, all right? We did it. We stood up for you, and this is enough. Okay? It's done.
Fair point. That's just a fair point.
I mean, it just can't happen. And then, what's next? All right? What happens next? Then we start doing holding calls on offensive linemen. I don't have that much time on Earth, okay? I can guarantee you that, all right? If I live 94 years, I don't have enough time to sit around and watch every single instant replay of every single possible pass interference call.
Bad call.
All right, next, Zion Cam. Now, in theory, Zion Cam is a great idea, right?
I mean,
Zion is a superstar. He has elevated the ratings, which we all love. Mm-hmm. He is going to be a star in the NBA. He's going to sell lots of tickets and merchandise, and he's going to make millions of dollars, and we are going to celebrate the greatness that is his talent, okay?
Yes.
But right now, he's not getting paid for it. So it's kind of like the thing where it's like, oh, that's such a cool idea, but he's still an amateur athlete, and you have a camera designated,
the whole time
to just him, and you're not going to give him any money for all those ratings that he is clearly boosting from people watching him. It just feels,
Just give him extra Duke dollars, whatever the dining hall thing is. We had Domer dollars at Notre Dame.
I can't remember what Limer called.
They're like, there's little things. Like, give him an extra cupcake for the cam. You know what I'm saying? Some incentive to have the camera only on him the whole time.
Wasn't it so sad when you ran out of dollars?
Oh my gosh! I mean, you guys, how long can
you last? I had the meal plan.
Yeah, but the meal plan, the
athlete meal plan. Yeah. So it was like, then you have to go eat in that cafeteria where you don't have the extra dollars.
Yeah, we didn't have training table at Notre Dame until Coach Kelly got there. That's how backwards Notre Dame's program was. So. Yeah, shout out to Coach Kelly for training table.
Yeah, that's important. All right, and finally, the Giants. So Giants co-owner John Mara, he's objecting to the idea that Eli is still there out of loyalty. He said, it really gets under my skin because it's absolute nonsense. Do I feel a certain amount of sentimentality? Sentimentality? Do I have some sentimental feelings towards Eli? Of course I do.
It's a Brandon word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who uses that word in a sentence? Would I ever let that way get in the way of making football? I'm done reading this stupid quote. The point is he's saying basically he is not sticking with Eli out of loyalty. So what you're saying is you're sticking with Eli because you don't know how to make football decisions then. Because basically, clearly, with a 5-11 record and having to just trade Eli and his QBR ranking leaving him at 25th amongst quarterbacks last season, what is your actual plan? tell us what your plan is then. Now, there's a lot of time still between now and the draft, mm-hmm. and maybe they make a move for Josh Rosen, and we all look stupid, okay? Right. Or really, just this quote means nothing because you still are moving off of Eli. Right. My point is like, I don't... There was a point where I was very adamantly defending Eli. I thought the situation with Geno Smith and whatever rookie quarterback they had at the time, no way I remember his name.
Come on, Brandon.
Anyway, the point is they went to Geno Smith, which we know what Geno Smith is, so there's no need for that. And it's not gonna Ashley Straub. The point is, I was very upset with him breaking his streak for no reason because it wasn't going to save the season and it wasn't to develop a quarterback, right. And I thought it was a disaster, and we can blame McAdoo for that, all right? Mm-hmm. But he's not there anymore, and you're still making decisions that are inexplicable. So I'm okay with the trade to move off of Odell if that's what you feel like you need to do, but I think all Giants fans and just NFL fans in general are like, what's your plan? What is it? And nobody really has an answer. Like, you're sticking with Eli? Cool. Why then? Because if it's not loyalty, this is acceptable to you moving forward? You think he's going to get better? I don't understand.
Trying to make running backs great again. Saquon, give the ball to Saquon every play.
Didn't they do that last year? That was the plan last year.
And threw the ball to Saquon quite a bit last year.
Right, and they were 5-11. That's not getting you anywhere. So mm-hmm. it's not good for any of us, for the Giants, to not be good.
No.
That's just facts.
Shouts to Davis Webb.
Davis Webb.
Thank you for that, Heller. All right, what's in the Migos Culture Report this week?
The Apple and Amazon world takeover continues. Mm. On Monday, Apple announced the rollout of 3 game changers in the multimedia landscape. The Sultans of the smartphone revealed that Apple TV Plus, a new streaming service comparable to Netflix and Hulu, but unlike Netflix and Hulu, Apple TV Plus will only feature original content produced by Apple for Apple TV Plus. Mm. In addition to Apple TV Plus, the overlords have added Apple TV channels. With this new service, Apple TV app, you can choose specific TV channels that you want to watch, bundle them, pay a specific price for those channels, but they're all given in Apple TV channels.
So I could buy like FS1
yes.
and Food Network and...
But you and
HGTV,
yeah, IDTV is what. But like all those things, but you don't. What about the things you randomly watch? That's what you get when you got the regular TV. You randomly watch them. Me and Michelle accidentally watched something in the Smithsonian Saturday morning. They had a lot of information about Los Angeles. It was beautiful. I wouldn't have known to buy that channel in advance.
How much are you willing to pay for that?
$200 a month. I mean, so it's every Saturday morning, find something random on before stuff comes on. I'm like, 2 cents. That's right. What I'm saying. I don't know the prices yet.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? But
so basically, they're working towards offering a la carte TV.
Yes, and it's through Apple, which is great. Okay, for those who don't have Apple TV, the app is being updated not only to Roku's and Amazon Fire Sticks, but this app, the update's going to be added in Samsung TVs, Sony TVs, Roku Power TVs, Vizio TVs, LG TVs, and Fire Stick Power TVs.
So basically, it's a wrap, and your lives have officially changed. And I told you so. And in this case, I'm okay with you supporting the man because Apple's amazing.
Well, yeah, this much like the 2008 Obama campaign, Apple is using power of celebrity to help market the newest products with people like Oprah Winfrey projects coming from her, Steven Spielberg, Reese Witherspoon, Jason Momoa. I know his name, Momoa. But anyways, how do you feel about...
I had a guava mimosa this weekend. Oh, it was fabulous.
That had been great.
It was delicious. Oakland.
Oh, yes.
Shout out Aunt Mary's in Oakland. Oh, so good.
But anyways, what do you think about living in the Apple era?
I'm for it. Take my money.
This is too big. This is a big...
It's amazing. All right, what else is going on?
Okay. Jordan Peele released his sophomore film, Us, last weekend. It's a horror movie that isn't scary and quite confusing, but I need everyone to go see it. So I'm gonna make time for everyone to see it.
All right, hold on. I have to pause. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, are you in the room?
I was gonna read everybody go see it. If you saw it, we can talk about it. But
I did see it. I saw it last night.
You want to talk about it?
We went and saw it last night.
I was going to let people...
I'm sorry.
Have you seen it?
I was gonna say.
Have you seen it?
No.
I'm gonna let everybody go see it.
You have seen it.
Donnie's seen it twice.
Okay, so all the black people in the room have seen it. Ari, you have seen it.
And Heller.
You're not gonna see it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Heller has seen it.
Heller saw it with me, though.
Well,
so.
You're like, you know.
Yeah, Heller saw it with me. No, we don't have to.
Do
you want to spoil it?
I don't want you to, but you guys, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones is a little different. Like, if we spoil early episodes of Game of Thrones,
Game
of Thrones has been out for 10 years. It's kind of on you if you were, like, trying to avoid spoilers. So that's a little, you know. That's what I'm saying.
My read was just to tell everybody to go see it, and we'll talk about it next week.
We will excuse you from the room if it's not deep.
Okay.
Wait, are you talking about it?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about it.
We're gonna talk about it.
All right, okay. So we're allowing John Hill to leave because we don't want the movie to be ruined. Ashley's also gonna leave.
Ooh,
that's
we playing the room out for the Us review. All right.
I mean, Jordan Peele has that power.
I mean, we're gonna talk about it.
All right. Well, we'll give it two good knocks when you can return.
Ashley on the way out. It hasn't even been out 1 week.
I mean, this is like, if you're gonna support the culture, at least what you gotta do. All right, just kidding. We're actually not going to spoil it. If you want me and Brandon's review, we're posting it as a bonus clip.
Yes.
But our overall feeling of that is crazy good.
Crazy good.
We're working on our rating system for the podcast, but right now we're giving it a crazy good. I actually give it like a crazy good plus.
Crazy good plus. I like it plus.
Because I think it's better than you think it is.
Yeah, no. I would say a crazy all right plus.
Like if you order a steak like medium or medium plus, I'm giving it a medium plus. I'm giving it a crazy good plus.
Okay.
To make it as complicated as possible to tell you how I feel about it.
And we'll follow it. We're going to get this down to a science.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen to the review. Find out what we really feel.
Thank you for that, Heller. All right. Thanks for joining us this week. We appreciate fiance Earl Watson coming in.
And friend of mine. That's my friend.
Yeah. And dropping some knowledge for us. Make sure that you subscribe on YouTube at the Maybe I'm Crazy Podcast and follow us on our pages at Maybe I'm Crazy Pod, Newman Show 99, Joy Taylor Talks. Thanks for joining us this week. Share, comment, tell your friends. We appreciate the love and we'll catch you next week.
Bye. Maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm not.